Welcome, everybody, to Redacted on this Tuesday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And on this show, we cover the stories the mainstream media largely ignores. And if you looked around the mainstream media today, you would have not seen any coverage of what's about to happen in Ukraine, which is, the shipping of tanks with depleted uranium stocks into Ukraine. This, of course, NATO being backed into a corner. So we're going to have the updates on what that means as President Vladimir Putin of Russia has now fired back, saying that this, of course, is an escalation beyond all escalations. So while everyone's focused on Trump and other things, this is probably the biggest story in the world right now, and we're going to cover it.
Plus, new revelations show that the Canadian government had a blacklist of companies that were sympathetic to the trucker convoy, and they shared that far and wide so that those companies would be punished. This is yet another example of a government choosing winners and losers. And in this case, choosing losers in a big way for not science. They called it science. We're going to talk about that. It's shocking.
Also, President Biden flew to meet with Justin Trudeau. On the agenda was the invasion of Haiti. Yes. Can we get our Canadian brothers up north to do the invading for us? Because we don't want to do it, because it would look bad. Suddenly we care about opinions about how it looks when we invade countries. So we'll bring you the very latest on what Canada's position is on the invasion of Haiti, thanks to President Biden's visit. We have all of that and more as Redacted starts right now. Got a couple Canadian stories today in the show. A lot of our Canadian viewers who are watching right now, let us know if you're joining us from Canada, saying Canadians need to revolt. Yeah, what's going on up in Canada? I remember when I was a kid growing up, I had to do a report. I had to write a country report.
Yeah.
It was like elementary school, and I wrote it about Canada. I was writing about this country, and I thought it was amazing, all the provinces and all the capitals and the history of the country. Wow, has that country fallen from my elementary school book report.
I had Estonia.
Estonia?
Mm-hmm.
How's Estonia shaping up these days?
Go ahead.
Oh, no. I was just going to say, I had Australia. I was obsessed with Australia.
You might be in the worst boat. I'm talking about how the countries have fallen.
Grading them on authoritarianism, Australia and Canada are tied. Estonia is a NATO country. But Estonia is having a bit of a renaissance for tourists, or at least it was before the pandemic. People thought it was a cool place to go.
All right. Well, we've got a lot of news to get to on this Tuesday, so we don't want to hold you up. But first, we do want to mention that we do have a community, and it's an amazing community. We have 49,000 members of our community, which is, you can join if you'd like and become a Redacted Rebel. Now we have... You can join it for free, or you can actually choose to become a Redacted Rebel, which actually, for the price of a cup of coffee once a month, you can support independent journalism. We are user-funded. We are not backed by billionaires. We are not CNN. We are not Fox. We are not MSNBC. So we are supported by you, the users. If you'd like to support us, you can do so by going to redacted.inc. That's the place to go. And you click on the Become a VIP Member. And then you can, again, choose what tier you like and support us if you'd like. Again, for the price of a cup of coffee. We're going to be ramping up a lot of exclusive content over there. David and I were talking earlier today about live streams we plan to do. Natalie's going to launch her book club there, which is really exciting. And so we're going to be doing that on there. So we'll have all sorts of exclusive Rebel content inside the Redacted community.
Clayton, just give me a... I have his sniffles. He gave me the sniffles, then I sniffled, and he gave me a...
No. Your mom jokes that you are like, she can hear you coming.
I'm a little snivelly.
From like floors away, because you always have the sniffles.
I'm a bit loud. Okay. I apologize in advance. Let's get to the news.
Okay. Let's do it. All right. Night, buddy. All right. Okay. Ready? Yeah, we'll do it now. All right. Well, crap is about to hit the fan in Ukraine. Russia just issued a warning to the United States. We have advanced weapons that you don't have, and we could destroy you. That was basically the message. If you don't back off right now with what your plans are, that's the message, because NATO may have just crossed the red line in Ukraine. And we're watching now to see the biggest maybe the biggest Russian response, like what that response will look like. This is a big developing story in Ukraine at this hour, and it could be a push towards World War III. Specifically, NATO, led by the United States and Britain, just introducing depleted uranium tank shells into the fight, which, of course, Russia warned about weeks ago. And as recently as a few days ago, said this is a red line you cannot cross, and we will respond accordingly. So we will get to that in a second. I mean, the U.S. has actually been pretty quiet about this. The U.K. government has actually been pretty vocal about this. And we're going to show you the video where these depleted uranium shells are caught on camera in a big propaganda piece by the British government. Like, here's our training of these Ukrainians and their tanks. Oh, and here's some depleted uranium shells, which when unleashed on a population causes cancer for generations to come. Again, I dare you to Google the term depleted uranium, Iraq, and look at the awful photos of children from Iraq from using depleted uranium shells and the tumors and the awful stuff. So that's coming in Ukraine. But first, before we even get there, the UN Security Council just voted on Russia's resolution to create a UN commission to investigate the largest ecological terror attack in world history, the bombing of the Nord Stream pipeline. Let's watch this vote. So here was the vote. Here is the vote. All right, how many of you in favor? How many of you in favor? Okay, we got one, we got two, and three. Okay, you got China, Russia, and Brazil in favor. How many opposed to the investigation of the Nord Stream pipeline? How many of you are opposed? How many of you are opposed or abstain? How many of you and... Oh, all of you! All of you pieces of shit! Don't want an investigation.
No, thank you.
What world am I living in? So my son, he's 12. He's more intelligent than all those people in that room. He's right now in the middle of a like a model UN, like learning about the United Nations, right? And he was assigned a country, and so he's been doing research and stuff. Anyway, nevertheless, he was asking tonight what's in the show, and I was talking about the United Nations, and he's like, "Oh, what about?" And I said, and I explained how the United States blew up the Nord Stream pipeline, but the United States says we didn't do it. In which case, you would then say, well, let's have an investigation. If we say we didn't do it, you should have an investigation. And my son said, yeah, Daddy, that makes no sense. That would be like me saying I didn't eat all the cookies and, you know, saying, hey, well, we're going to look in your stomach to prove it. And no, I don't want you to look in my stomach. Well, why wouldn't you? Well, because if you didn't eat all the cookies, then we shouldn't look there.
That's a very invasive example, but we'll go with it.
That's all we could think of in the moment. We were just flying by the seat of our pants. It was me and my son just kind of spitballing ideas.
It was a pro-Ukrainian group. What else do they need to know?
Right. So no investigation. You don't need to do an investigation. We already told you. So can you believe that? All of these countries, like, nope, no investigation
That's
needed.
Insane.
And Russia that wanted an international investigation. The United Nations would do the investigation. No, we don't. We vote against that.
That is infuriating.
Yes. Like, if you ever, sometimes I just walk around our studio and our office and I'm like, what is happening in this clown world?
Yeah.
Like, how do these people live with themselves at night? Daddy, what did you do today? Oh, I voted against investigating the largest ecological terror attack in world history. Good, Daddy. You want to go out and play some basketball?
Because I'm not very interested.
Because I'm a piece of shit.
I don't find that interesting.
All of those against say no. I mean, we all knew that the United States carried out the bombing of the Nord Stream pipeline. You have to be an idiot to think otherwise. But they insist they didn't. Wouldn't it be an amazing opportunity for them to clear their name? Right? We had a UN investigation with all of these countries got us off the hook.
Let's see how long the no votes stay in the council.
Yeah.
Like, right. Next time they're going to be like, oh, where are those people? Oh, we got rid of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, the three of them, Brazil, China, and Russia. Well, last week, Secretary of State Antony Blinken was directly asked about the Nord Stream pipeline. Here was his response.
I'll implore you on that, move to a question. Last September, Nord Stream pipelines were blown up. You're now in a formal setting. Can you assure the world that no agency of the U.S. government blew up those pipelines or facilitated
yes,
that
yes,
action?
Yes, I can.
Thank you. Putin has told us he wants to restore the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
Roger that. Next.
So.
Talk about box ticking.
Oh, my God. I mean, literally, kids. I would love for kids just come closer to your television. This is what it looks like when a grown man is lying right to your face. Lying right to your face. Let's watch it again.
Well,
I'm going to implore you on that. Move to a question. Last September, Nord Stream pipelines were blown up. You're now in a formal setting. Can you assure the world that no agency of the U.S. government blew up those pipelines or facilitated
yes,
that?
Yes, I can.
Thank you.
Well, and think about it. That plays to the narrative. They're saying it was a pro-Ukrainian group. He's on the record now saying it wasn't an actual, you know, department of the military. So that leaves it to what? Volunteers that are over there that we've sent over there?
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
They're pro-Ukrainian.
Who is it?
Well, that's what the New York Times said, that they were just state actors that were sort of renegade or freelancers. Like a freelance writer, you just get a freelance pipe blower upper.
Well, and also, you know, he may be able to sort of step out of this and say, I don't know. You know, I was not in those negotiations. So, yeah, I can say that that U.S. wasn't involved because he wasn't brought into those meetings. Now, ask the same question of Ned Price. Ask the same question of the other people involved.
But that's not what the question was. The question was, can you say with certainty that the U.S. didn't do it? He's not saying, did you know anything about it? He's saying, do you know for sure that it wasn't the U.S.? And he says, yes, definitively, which then would require a response. Like, how do you know that? Because there's so much gray area right now. Can you give us tell us what allows you to say that with such declarative nature?
Well, he just moves right on, right? Because then he's down to the next question. He's like, good, I'm glad we got that out of the way. You're a good guy. All right, let's move on.
But he's not giving him a way of plausible deniability. Like, not did you know? Did you know? Did you have any evidence of this?
Yeah.
That was my point with how he framed the question, because he specifically said it in a way that it limits the amount of people he's asking. It's like, this little branch of our military, you're sure it wasn't this small thing, but that's outside of the mercenaries we have, all the other stuff that falls outside of that still we would consider military because they're paid from our budget.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just so disgusted, with our government. I mean, it makes my skin crawl to think about these people and these people in power right now sitting in Washington just totally ignoring questions posed to them in a congressional hearing, lying right to our faces. Like, this is, so when I teach my children about government and like civil service and the United Nations, like I'm looking at a bunch of scumbags and these are the people that are in power. Like, why would my son want to learn about this organization, like held up in such high regard when they're literally sitting there as a group of liars? It's really, really disgusting and disheartening. And to see what's happening with, I mean, nuclear attacks on nuclear power plants, and the UN does nothing. You got a story on Libya here we're going to talk about. Does nothing. Does nothing about, what's going on in Nicaragua. I mean, awful, awful stuff. So anyway, just feeling like punched in the stomach with this stuff. Before we get to the depleted uranium, which is about to be unleashed on the civilians that live in Donetsk and the greater Donbas region, I like this comment here. Natalie pointed it out in our chat. From
Shankar N says, uranium plus depleted uranium equals depleted Ukrainium. That's a good play on words. It's an awful thing, though, because that is exactly what will happen, is the complete depletion of that land.
Awful. Yeah. So remember, guys, what's happening in Donetsk, what's happening in former Eastern Ukraine, now Russia, that this was Eastern Ukraine. Many ethnic Russians lived in this area since 2014. Ukraine, of course, has been bombing this region, carrying out a genocide. Last year, Russia had enough of the bombing, And the killing of civilians, and they moved in. They called it a special military operation. The rest of the world, you know, called it an invasion, and they were going to, you know, take over Ukraine. But if you actually understood what was going on here, it was much more nuanced than that, but they didn't care. They took over. Russia came in, took over this area. And the people voted to become part of Russia in this section of Ukraine. It you know, it didn't have to be this way, but NATO wanted it this way. But some newly unearthed, stunning video from CNN has emerged. It's from about a decade ago. Yes, CNN had reporters in Donetsk covering the genocide. Did you know that? I didn't. And they were covering what Ukraine was doing to the people of that eastern part of that country, their own people, their own citizens. CNN does not want you to see this video, and that's why they've hidden it on their website. But thanks to the internet, we're going to show it to you now. This is CNN covering Donetsk, the Donbas, being attacked by Ukraine. Watch.
Petro Poroshenko will have a hard time winning back hearts and minds in this city. As the people of Donetsk sweep up the debris of their homes and livelihoods, they are hardened against a president they say is killing his own people. We are Ukrainian, but they kill us, this man says. So we probably need our own country. But people in Kiev, they are not brothers for us. The shells hit these homes days ago, but the tears are still fresh.
We live on the ground. It was so hard for 2 weeks, especially for 27, 28, 29th. But only today it's quiet. Sorry, I need to go.
Two people were killed outside this block of flats last Wednesday. One of them was a 50-year-old woman, the other a 34-year-old woman. Her husband, who won't talk to us, he says he's in shock, managed to make it down to the cellar with their little child, but she just didn't have the time. And this is a story that repeats itself over and over in dozens of apartment blocks, with civilians being killed by the constant shelling around Donetsk.
CNN.
I guess they've forgotten that.
That's before the narrative shifted, and they were no longer allowed to tell the truth about what was going on there. Once, of course, the deep state got their claws in you and told you to start covering this story, that's how it unfolded. So CNN, of course, wasn't alone in their coverage of this genocide or the neo-Nazis or any of the stuff that was happening there. At the time, the press was warning that this was bad news. Most of the press. And that the U.S. was going to drag us into war in Ukraine. That was the message from Europe. Like, hey, watch what the U.S. is doing right now, meddling in Ukraine. They're going to drag us into war. Here's the front page of the Guardian newspaper. In Ukraine, the U.S. is dragging us towards war. Washington's role in Ukraine and its backing for the regime's neo-Nazis has huge implications for the rest of the world. May 13th, 2014. Oh. So this morning, the tanks arrive. The tanks have arrived, complete with training on how to use depleted uranium shells. We're waiting to find out if those shells have now arrived in Ukraine. I'm sure they were shipped as part of the bundle of these tanks. So what's going on here? Well, Ukrainian soldiers have been filmed alongside depleted uranium ammunition in Britain that Britain is supplying out of their own country for the fight against Russia. Now, the footage was included in a new documentary just released in the past 24 hours. The UK Ministry of Defense released this video of Ukrainian tank crews completing their training. Like, hey, they just graduated to go back to Ukraine and then be destroyed. They'll probably last 4 hours, right? That's what Ukraine has said, that a soldier's lifespan is now about 4 hours once it hits the battlefield. So these people that have had 3 months of training now, they won't live very long after this. Here's just a little taste of this new propaganda piece that the British Ministry of Defense just released. I watched this whole thing, so you don't have to. Here's just a sample of this tank training that you're paying for with tax dollars.
Yes, so obviously we are obviously training the Ukrainian drivers. So it's a 3-week course for them themselves. So normal drivers take about a month. But obviously we're going through the process of how to guide the vehicle on the ground. But also we do maintenance. So like at the moment, we're changing sprockets. That's due to wear and tear. But it's a good thing for them. If it does happen, they've got a way to do it, knowledge of how to do it in the field. And then.
Yeah. So that's the tank. So we sped up their training. Normally it would take a month, but we've sped it up. We've sped up their training. So we just get them back in there as cannon fodder. So we'll show you that depleted uranium footage in a second, but here's an eagle-eyed observer caught the depleted uranium shells in the video. So this is a screen grab from the video here. You can see them sitting on the table and some of those shells. So you can see that there. The U.S. denies supplying depleted uranium ammunition to Ukraine, and yet here are those shells. Here's a U.S. soldier in Britain teaching Ukrainian troops about these tank shells. So this is a U.S. soldier. They are doing the training, pointing them out and instructing them how to load them, how to be familiar with them, showing them the different ammunition types. These depleted uranium rounds that are being supplied to Ukraine. This was captured on camera as part of that same British documentary. Watch.
And one track will be slightly looser. One track will be a lot tighter.
So there you can see the shells on the table. As you can see, explaining how these things load, how they explode.
The only other thing I would say, only because they were
Americans.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's an American accent.
Yeah, so Americans explaining how these different shells work.
Okay, so as you can see then, it's yellow, which denotes it's got high explosive content inside it. Yeah, so inside the round there is high explosive content.
Yeah. So these are the rounds being shipped with the tanks. Well, most likely, right? So we still need confirmation that they have now arrived in Ukraine, but the tanks are showing up and they've already told us they're going to. According to Ukraine's Minister of Defense, Annabel Goldie, last week, Britain will be sending depleted uranium shells to Ukraine with these tanks. That's right from the ministry's mouth. As we reported last week, these are armor-piercing weapons that cause cancer. And if you need it and gets into the soil and the fragments from the dust of this will ruin people's lives and, of course, this area for decades, generations to come. So, hey, if we can't have this area back, this eastern Ukraine back, that's now part of Russia, we'll just deplete the area, make it a no man's land, and kill all the people there. If you need any more evidence that the West wants the total destruction of the Donbas, then look no further. Putin responded to the UK defense minister announcing these new shell deliveries. Watch this again.
Что Великобритания устами заместителя главы Министерства обороны этой страны объявила не только о поставках танков на Украину, но и снарядов с обедненным ураном. Похоже, что Запад действительно решил воевать с Россией до последнего украинца уже не на словах, а на деле. Но хотел бы в этой связи отметить, что если все это будет происходить, то соответствующим образом Россия вынуждена будет реагировать, имея в виду, что коллективный Запад начинает применять уже оружие с ядерным компонентом.
So Russia said yesterday that we have advanced weapons that you don't have that could destroy you. And if you don't back off right now. So here we are, like on the precipice. And this comes on a day when Germany also rolled in their tanks. So all the tanks are now arriving just in time for whatever shit is about to hit the fan inside of Ukraine. On Monday, Der Spiegel reported that 18 Leopard 2 battle tanks have been received by the Ukrainian government after the tanks were successfully delivered across the Ukrainian border. And the UK sending their tanks, the United States still working on getting their tanks delivered, and all of these additional armored vehicles now showing up. So, peace talks? So, UK sending tanks with depleted uranium, German tanks just arrived. So, get ready, folks. There's your on the precipice of World War III.
If you want to get a clear example or like this is a clear example of NATO's real like intentions towards Ukraine of having them fight to the last person because they wait until like their army is already completely decimated and then they're like, okay, here's some tanks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like they didn't get to that right in the beginning. They're like because they don't really care.
No, and now we're sending in jets.
Yeah.
So jets and tanks and depleted uranium. You know, like,
yeah, but I'm gonna still argue that how do we don't even know that their military is depleted like they keep telling us. And it's like, are they just using that as an excuse to keep sending more weapons and money because of the it's like a money laundering scheme? Because like we've not seen any proof of the of the numbers at all.
Well, the Senate today announcing that they're going to putting together an auditing like body that's going to actually finally start like looking into things.
Oh, I believe that. So 100%.
We'll get to the bottom of this. Like, well, you know, like there was the Taliban in the past, like 24 hours released videos in Afghanistan, had like all these weapons, like they're parading around with U.S. weapons, like U.S. weapons are flowing everywhere.
Yes.
Not to the, you know, and those who needed it in Ukraine, I guess. I mean, those are people who are gone. You know, those people have been destroyed.
That's the recipe for any successful business, isn't it? Like you start your business and then like a year or two later, you get an accountant.
Yeah.
Right. Just so that you know, they can come in and come in and find out what you've been up to, you know, like
2 years later.
So you get that. Yeah. 2 years later.
Well, we've got more news to get to here on this Tuesday. We're going to look at Canada's blacklist. The people who are on it can expect all sorts of things from their Trudeau government. We're also going to look at the invasion of Haiti, which is what President Biden has been asking Canada. So we've got a couple of Canada-based stories. You know, United States isn't the only authoritarian country in the world right now bashing people. We'll get to all of that. But first, attention. Are you an investor looking for an easier way to trade stocks? And would you like 17 free stocks? With Moomoo, my favorite trading platform, there's no steep learning curve. It has a simple interface and it's easy to use, so even beginners can take advantage of the stock market in no time. Plus, it offers powerful tools, often reserved for experienced investors, like customizable watch lists and advanced charting capabilities. And now Moomoo even has a powerful new earnings calendar, so you don't have to hunt and peck trying to find earnings schedules for your favorite companies. Right now, for a limited time, Moomoo is giving away 17 free stocks when you open your account and you make your initial deposits. Even if you never do anything else with the account, you get to keep those free stocks. Moomoo has zero commission trades, and the app looks amazing on every platform, from iOS to Android to Windows and Mac. Moomoo can help you trade with its advanced tools like their stock screener and their earnings calendar. So no matter what your skill level is, you'll find fantastic tools that can help you trade. Open your free Moomoo account today. Get access to zero commission trades and 17 free stocks when you open your account and make your initial deposits. So to learn more, check out our link at redacted.inc/Moomoo. That's redacted.inc/Moomoo. Someone in the chat said Clayton got Pfizer stocks.
Yeah.
No, I'm not Nancy Pelosi. Sorry, Ed. Pfizer stocks.
That's a good one.
That's good.
That's a good one.
No, if you looked at my stock portfolio, it's very small, and it's literally minerals producers. You know, it's gold, silver, and uranium producers. So no Pfizer stocks. No Moderna, nothing like that.
All right. Well, we're going to tell you about how the Canadian government chose winners and losers in business around the trucker convoy, because they blacklisted companies that were sympathetic to the trucker convoy and made no attempts to keep that information private or protect the privacy of any of those companies on the list. This is according to some new reports. Now, we already know that the government refused to listen to protesters. Recall that the protesters were not protesting the vaccine. They were protesting vaccine mandates for people who had already worked the entire pandemic without a vaccine, worked mostly alone, and wanted the freedom to choose whether or not to get vaccinated. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau at the time was very snooty about them. He called them anti-science. We now know that whole there's science behind a vaccine mandate argument, it doesn't hold up. There's you can shoot
of stuff.
Oh yeah, let's let him talk. Let's let him say
up to do the right thing to protect the freedoms and the rights of Canadians to get back to the things we love to do. We know the way through this pandemic is by getting everyone vaccinated. And the overwhelming majority, close to 90% of Canadians, have done exactly that. The small fringe minority of people who are on their way to Ottawa or who are holding unacceptable views that they're expressing do not represent the views of Canadians who have been there for each other, who know that following the science and stepping up to protect each other is the best way to continue to ensure our freedoms, our rights, our values as a country.
Unacceptable views, he says. You know, again, we can poke a lot of holes in that. The idea that getting vaccinated was the way out of the pandemic. You know, more about those people. I mean, the companies who had unacceptable views, I suppose, were anyone who thought they have the right to protest. They have the right to say they don't want a mandate. Nothing about the vaccine itself, but against vaccine mandates.
Yeah, I mean, again, you pointed out that these people were, many of them were already vaccinated.
Right.
Right, and they wanted the freedom to do their job. Yes. Without government oppression.
Yeah. And again, you know, time has just not been kind to that kind of rhetoric that if everyone doesn't get vaccinated, it prevents everyone else from going back to their regular life. That was never true. We thought it at the time. There was a small, well, David didn't, but there was a small portion of time when that was the general belief system that if everyone got vaccinated, then everyone else could go back to their regular life. But given what we now know about transmissibility through what we call now breakthrough cases, wasn't breakthrough cases. Just even Pfizer has said that the vaccine is only to keep you out of the hospital. It's not to prevent contraction now. So it wasn't just fringe citizens, though. It was apparently fringe companies, too. And now an MP named Arnold Viersen has submitted a request earlier this year from the ministry to find out the following. Here's his inquiry of ministry, and it's typed at the bottom in very small type, so I will summarize for you. He wants to know what was the total number of employees or full-time equivalents who were assigned to report, monitor, advise, or gather information for their department about the convoy and protesters. So how many people did we have tracking them, basically? Was the information collected shared with any banks or financial institutions? And if so, which ones? Did any non-governmental entities receive this information? And if so, which ones? What were the estimated costs describing the work described in the first task? Now, these are reasonable questions because it would give us a sense of what the government instructed its employees to do, how much work they actually did in reaching into private information, and who was doing it. In response to this, he found out that the finance minister, Chrystia Freeland's office, distributed this blacklist to the police, naming 201 companies. The records show that it was then distributed to Canadian officers of some banks' headquarters in foreign countries. Many of them were trucking companies. So specifically, not just who were the truckers, but what were the companies behind this so that we could then punish them where it hurts in their finances. Of these 201 companies, 198 were Canadian, and the list went much further than that. Here's a summary. It says other banks on the distribution list included France headquarters, BNP Paribas, Habib Bank of Pakistan, Hana Financial Group, located in South Korea, ICICI Bank Limited of India, Mizuho Financial Group of Japan, and Wells Fargo, headquartered in San Francisco, according to BlackRock that did this original reporting. Now, the RCMP, the Canadian police, offered to act as a conduit of information between provincial and territory law enforcement and financial institutions in order for the entities to fulfill their obligations under the Emergency Economic Measures Order to cease dealing with designated individuals and to determine on a continuing basis whether they were in possession or control of property owned, held, or controlled by on or behalf of a designated person. By official estimate, around $7.8 million held in 267 bank and credit union accounts and 170 Bitcoin wallets owned by the Freedom Convoy sympathizers were frozen by federal authorities at the time of the protests. And accounts were frozen based on this list given to the Royal Police. Now,
really quick, how do you freeze a Bitcoin wallet? Like, that's supposed to be outside of their purview. How in the heck do you even do that?
They did it with the exchanges. Coinbase that they did it at the time?
I know they used a bunch of different exchanges. So BlockFi, Coinbase. And if Coinbase, you know, is registered in the United States, the government can do whatever the hell they want with it, right? And that's why a lot of these, of course, DeFi and a lot of these crypto companies don't want to have anything to do with the United States because of all of this government reach-in.
Yes. Right? I mean, but this was Canada.
Sorry to derail, but it's just like that's the whole selling point of crypto is that it's outside of their control and their peer view. So it, like to hear that is alarming because a lot of people are invested in that here. And that means they could do the same thing.
Well, to be clear, and I think you're hitting on something that's important, and Natalie brings it up, is that if you have it in cold storage, like you've got your Bitcoin or whatever on your own little dingus, right, not plugged in and not on one of these exchanges are in some ways, you know, many ways regulated, right? They have to fill out KYC, all of stuff. So, you know, BlockFi, Coinbase, all of these, a lot of these big companies. So if you have your coins or whatever, your money off of that on a digital wallet that you keep in cold storage, they can't touch it. I mean, unless they could come to your house and do whatever they're going to do with
it. Well, they could take it, but
they don't have your keys. You have that memorized. You have your own keys stored somewhere. They can't ever get access to that. But if you're on these exchanges, they can, you know, they
then
can
seize
it.
Then it's just a matter of like locking out your username and password in some cases.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, the Emergency Act allowed the government to take these extreme measures by blacklisting companies that wanted to stand for their freedoms or wanted to support their employees in doing so. And they froze their assets and they shared their information without any concern for privacy. It would seem, on the surface at least, that this was an egregious abuse of power on the part of the Trudeau government. But we're pretty sure that no one will ever be punished for it because the Canadian government conducted an inquiry and the judge issued 5 volumes of reports. But basically his conclusion was that the inquiry be complete. And unless new politicians bring it up, it will most likely stay that way because he said that, the Emergencies Act that came during the trucker convoy was appropriate.
Oh, okay.
So that's, you know, all of those hearings that we saw Trudeau testifying, pretty much they said, yeah, you needed to do this because of truckers who wanted to, you know, who had saved our butt during the pandemic, but, you know, didn't want to fall in line when we had a vaccine. So yes, appropriate.
The tyranny, the Canadian tyranny. And, you know, you remember, of course, that Justin Trudeau is Klaus Schwab's favorite protege. Hmm. He said as much. He's like, no one in the world is a better example of what the World Economic Forum is trying to accomplish than our young Justin Trudeau. So look no further than that. As someone pointed out in the chat, they're rolling out 15-minute cities in Canada. Would love to be able to do a deeper dive on those 15-minute cities in Canada. As they try to control everything up there. We've got more Canada to talk about in just a second, actually. We're going to talk about President Biden flying into Canada, trying to coerce them into invading Haiti on our behalf. What was the response? What is the United States and Canada up to with their invasion of Haiti? It's coming because the money is now on the table, baby, and it's ready to go. Why are we going to invade Haiti again? Why are we looking to destabilize another country? We'll get to that in a second. First, though, it's no secret. If you're tuned in, then you know experts are already predicting a recession headed our way. We're seeing the numbers now of hyperinflation. We could see another rate cut. We could actually see the first rate cut, which we thought might cut in September from the Federal Reserve, could come much earlier because there are some tidal waves about to hit the U.S. economy. And if you've got your money tied to the U.S. dollar, look out, folks. We've been telling you now for years on this show, prepare, prepare, prepare. Obviously, you got to pay your bills in U.S. dollars. You got to do your thing, but make sure your family's finances and your family's future is not tied to the U.S. dollar. The warning signs are there. And our friends over at Lear Capital can help you get set up with a self-directed account that you control, not the banks. And you can buy precious metals. You could buy stocks if you want to. You could buy Bitcoin if you want to. But the beauty of having a self-directed account that they'll help you set up is you can also buy gold and silver inside of your account. Then it'll grow tax-free. So the government can't touch it. And then it grows tax-free. You don't have to pay any taxes on it. And you at retirement age, you get the benefit of all of that gold and silver having appreciated over that time. But even more than the appreciation, which is great, it's wealth preservation. Taking $1, which is declining every day, U.S. dollar or euro, you pick your poison, and converting it to precious metals, which has sustained for 4,000-5,000 years. Okay, that's why we're so bullish on precious metals here on this show. Right now, if you buy 1 ounce of gold, Lear Capital is giving you an ounce of silver for free. That's incredible. Literally free silver that you can keep or sell immediately. Do whatever you want with it. There's a lot of gold companies to choose from. Lear Capital has 25 years experience, thousands of five-star reviews, and risk-free guarantee that gives you 24 hours to review your purchase before committing to it. Lear Capital is a top choice when buying gold and silver. So you can call their 1-800 number. It's on your screen. Just get on the phone with them. They'll give you a free gold kit. You can decide, look it over, see what if it's a good fit for you or not. 1-800-613-3557 or go to learredacted.com. Learredacted.com to get your free bonus medals when you check them out. Again, 800 number is 1-800-613-3557 or go to learredacted.com. Well, President Biden is fresh off his trip to Canada, where he went to meet with Justin Trudeau, among other things, to discuss plans to invade Haiti. What did you do this weekend? That's what President Biden was doing in Canada. The U.S. says that it doesn't want to send military forces, and Canada says it doesn't want to either. So instead, do they really want to attack Haiti after all? Then what in the heck was the meeting all about? Or is this just all political theater? We will get to the bottom of all of this. Redacted correspondent Dan Cohen has been on the Haiti story for us from the very beginning, following it very closely. Dan, what do you make of this President Biden trip to Canada this weekend?
Well, let's look at their statements. So Biden and Trudeau meet in Ottawa, and they held a press conference announcing that Canada would send even more money to reinforce the Haitian National Police.
Today I'm announcing that Canada will invest an additional $100 million to provide better police support to the National Police Force in Haiti.
Biden was then asked by a reporter about a potential military invasion of Haiti. Listen to his answer.
Are you disappointed that Canada is not part or hasn't taken a bigger role in the multilateral forces in Haiti? And what would you like Canada to do more in addition to the $100 million announced today?
Any decision about military force was often raised, we think, would have to be done in consultation with the United Nations and with the Haitian government. And so that is not off the table, but that is not in play at the moment.
So back in October of 2022, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres presented two options for military intervention in Haiti. And both of those involve the Haitian National Police. The only difference is whether the police do the dirty work with foreign military advisors behind them, or if those foreign military advisors actually carry out combat operations with the police side by side. So both of these options involve reinforcing the police. You know, I'm using air quotes here. So when they say we don't want to intervene, so we'll just reinforce the police, well, that is intervention. They're using misdirection and kind of carefully couched language to avoid saying it. Then over the weekend, the Canadian state broadcaster, the CBC, published a lengthy explainer on Haiti, which is really just an incredible propaganda piece overall. But I want to focus in on this key part where it discusses how Canada has already sent military aircraft over Haiti and warships to its coast, which we've reported on here at Redacted, in addition to the troll farm that they ran attacking our reporting and trying to gin up support for these military operations. But the reporter or the explainer says that's not enough.
Nobody believes that any of this will be enough to solve Haiti's crisis. Rather, there would have to be a direct involvement from some kind of coalition of willing nations.
How about Canada taking the lead of an intervention force, but in collaboration with what the countries of the region can offer.
Translation, boots on the ground, led or guided in some capacity by Canada, but made up primarily of people from neighboring countries. A kind of international Caribbean police force. Something very limited in scope, limited in time, but very focused on propping up Haiti's national police, eventually paving the way for free and fair elections.
So coalition of the willing, Dan, this is something we've talked about over the past year about Haiti, trying to gather up like an Iraq style coalition of the willing to go in and try to invade or act as peacekeepers. So this is very like Bush era reminiscent language, isn't it?
Exactly. Coalition of the willing, boots on the ground. The language he uses is just a little too obvious, but you know, they use this, I think, to create a sort of facade of international goodwill for this military invasion. The Miami Herald also has a piece out over the weekend titled U.S. Shifts to Support Peacekeeping Mission in Haiti After Push for Intervention Falters. That's the title. So what is the difference between peacekeeping mission and intervention? They don't say, and there doesn't appear to be any fundamental real difference between an intervention and a peacekeeping mission. In that CBC explainer, the host says a military invasion, this, you know, that he proposes would be limited, very limited in scope and time. You know, to me, they always say that with these interventions, that it's going to be very, very short and it'll be welcome. I mean, I remember, you know, Donald Rumsfeld saying that about Iraq, and you know, that's my generation. I grew up, you know, in the Iraq War, so all these things are just burned into my brain. And then, of course, it was totally contradicted by everything that happened. All of this at the same time that the Biden administration is holding its democracy summit and is trumpeting what it calls the Global Fragility Act, which has not been reported on a whole lot, but is very important. It is the U.S. government's initiative to basically keep Russia and China out of countries around the world through a combination of military operations and diplomatic pressure. So in so-called fragile countries that the U.S. sees as susceptible to influence from China or Russia, that they might, you know, look outside the U.S. orbit, the U.S. really wants to find a way to keep its hand in there.
Can we Sure. Comment on the Global Fragility Act for a second? Because this whole thing is a farce, right? It's predicated on the idea that the United States will keep other countries out of war, that we will interrupt potential pathways of conflict. That's literally like in the words of this act, right? That we will, quote, interrupt potential pathways to conflict, reduce threats before they arrive on our shores. I mean, it's laughable, really. And they think that we buy this kind of stuff. This is the kind of propaganda that's being put out by the Biden administration.
Exactly. And there's a very heavy military component. I mean, if you look at the text, the basic text of the Global Fragility Act, it's State Department, it's U.S. aid, and it's the Pentagon. It's a major military operation component. So they want to prevent conflict from breaking out by using the U.S. military. And, you know, we should say that this is not just the Biden administration's thing. This was passed in 2019 by Congress under the Trump administration. So this is both parties. This is the uniparty or the deep state. And, you know, regardless of who the president is, this is how the U.S. is pushing its foreign policy. But it hasn't gotten, there hasn't been a lot of reporting on it now. And it has kind of a sort of a boring name, Global Fragility Act. What does that even mean? But now the U.S. is being very vocal about it. And the first country, it lists several countries as the first targets for this act. And the very first one is actually Haiti. So contrary to what that Canadian CBC explainer was saying, this isn't about the short term. The Global Fragility Act is very clear that it's about the next 10 years. This is long term.
Right, as they say, oh, this is going to be a short-term thing. We just want peacekeepers there. It's not about intervention. It's literally about peacekeeping, and it'll be a short-term sunsetted thing, 6 months. Don't worry about it. We'll be out of there. But really, it's
exactly
10 years or longer.
Right. And so now they have their specific plan for Haiti that they've just published this week. This is brand new. And they're say of the how they want to implement the Global Fragility Act. And there are two phases. So during the first phase, it says the U.S. government efforts will engage and leverage partners among Haitian civil society and Haitian national police. et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's the key part, that they want this to be a military thing with kind of lipstick on a pig at the beginning in this first phase. And they say that initial efforts will focus on key high crime and high violence neighborhoods. So it sounds like, you know, high violence neighborhoods, they're talking about the poorest neighborhoods. And these are the ones that are to be first targeted to take out whichever groups, whomever they want, which would, of course, be Jimmy Cherizier and the G9, who, you know, we've reported on extensively. The one figure who is sanctioned by the United States, the Canadians, the EU, the UK, and the UN. Another highlight that's really remarkable to me, it says, the plan will respond to and incorporate lessons learned from decades of interventions in Haiti and elsewhere. They talk about a holistic systems approach. You know, it's just a bunch of gobbledygook that is pretty meaningless. But, you know, I think about what are the lessons that they learned from previous interventions in various, you know, in any country, whether in Iraq or Afghanistan or Haiti itself. I mean, Haiti was absolutely terrorized by U.S. and U.N. soldiers. I mean, U.N. soldiers who were there until 2017, who actually raped women and children. So none of that is listed as lessons to be learned. It's just, oh, we need a more holistic approach.
Yeah, not only that, not just in Haiti, but they also, in this Global Fragility Act, talk about the lessons learned with decades or U.S. conflicts in Afghanistan, Iraq, and elsewhere. So this idea is we've learned a lot. We've learned a lot, and we're really putting our best foot forward now on all future invasions.
Exactly. So, you know, the lesson isn't, well, maybe we shouldn't invade countries and, you know, intervene where we're not wanted. It's, we just need to do it smarter, a little bit smarter. So,
yeah, using different pieces of propaganda and using the news media in a different way and finding out ways to call it peace missions instead of invasions or, we'll find out different ways. Sorry to interrupt you, but I just laugh at the tweaking of it. Nothing is going to change. It's just the language changes, right?
Exactly. And, you know, sometimes it's like, this really just shows how important language and how they kind of portray it to the public is in getting people to accept these, you know, these interventions abroad that, you know, very few Americans would actually support. I mean, when they're polled, there's very little support for these kinds of things. So it's all about framing and language and propaganda, and which is, you know, why I think this work, kind of, you know, going through it, sifting through it and debunking it is so important. So, I mean, it's really, again, we've said this on the show before, but it's a matter of time before this military invasion happens. And, you know, Biden said it.
He did indeed. Well, we've been staying on top of it. Dan's been staying on top of it. Thank you so much for your coverage of this, Dan. We really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Clayton.
And someone in the chat just said right now, Haiti should talk to the BRICS nations about joining BRICS.
Right. Get themselves some protection.
Yeah, seriously. It's like, yeah, can we have some protection here? Because Russia and China absolutely do not want the U.S. meddling in Haiti, another country that they're going to exploit for minerals, to steal their minerals and cheap labor. So, you know, this is exactly what this is where some of the dissension has been in the United Nations. Sometimes the United Nations has some good moments. Rarely.
Oh, well, I'm not going to tell you about them, though, in the upcoming report. I just want to warn you on that.
On Libya?
That's a spoiler.
All right, let's tell us.
Okay. Spoiler alert.
Well, yeah, we'll do that. And we got a store. We should mention, everyone, we have a store. It's redactedstore.com. And we have, I think, for 2 days left, right? 2 days left on our limited run t-shirts of our store, yep, which is at redactedstore.com. We have our silence equals complicity t-shirts, meaning if you're silent and you know that your government is carrying out awful things, doing awful things, if you stand by and you're silent, you are equally complicit, right? So speaking out against war, this is our show is perhaps the largest anti-war show on the interwebs. And so this is our limited run anti-war t-shirt. If you want to grab it, you can grab it now. Literally, it ends at midnight on March 31st. So silence equals complicity. You can go to redactedstore.com. You pick up any merch there, hats, t-shirts, mugs, and it'll support what we do here We keep the costs right a little bit above cost just to cover and help us out, keep the lights on here, but we do not jack up any prices. We try to keep it very, very low. So grab a hoodie, grab any kind of merch you want. Redactedstore.com. David, you're wearing the Redacted hat right now, aren't you?
I think I'm wearing the hat and the Silence Equals Complicity shirt.
Oh, it looks so good on you. I couldn't see it. It was under your lower third.
I'm all redacted out today.
Nice. Mine are in the mail, so they should be, they should be here soon.
Got the R on the sleeve, and then we also got the Redacted Rebel logo on the other sleeve.
I love it.
Love it.
That's awesome. Awesome. Yeah. I can't wait to see some of those out in the wild. Well, the day that I see a Silence Equals Complicity t-shirt out in the wild, I'm going to run up and hug that person.
I know.
I can't wait to see that. That's so excited. So also send us your photos.
Permission first.
Yeah. I'm going to go up and hug that person and grab their ass.
Then no one's going to buy that t-shirt.
No one's going to buy that t-shirt. yeah. You know what we should do though? We would love for you to email us some photos. So we set up a photo email account just for photos. If you get some merch and you want to take some photos of you and your family, whatever, you can send them in and we'll show your photos here on the show. It's just photos@redacted.inc. So you can send us an email with a photo of you wearing a hoodie or sweatshirt and we'll show it here. Specifically, I'd love to see the Silence Equals Complicity t-shirts on people out in the wild. So anyway, thank you for that.
All right, we want to tell you about this. The United Nations Human Rights Council says that there are human rights violations happening in Libya, according to a new report. Mm. The report describes a generalized practice of arbitrary detention, murder, torture, slavery, forced disappearance in the country since 2016. Now, that's a very specific time to rewind the tape for the history of modern Libya. But they gave themselves permission to look into what's going on into Libya through this sort of, you know, confounded, like, hey, it'll be you go figure out what's going on there situation. The report accuses militias and other state-affiliated groups of doing this with the misappropriation of funds. Now, as I report this, it is important to keep in mind just how aligned the United Nations is with the West, specifically the U.S. and NATO. It will become abundantly clear as we go through this. So, according to the UN, who should be held responsible for the human rights abuses in Libya? Russia, actually. Oh, and Europe are who they name responsible for this. Definitely not the U.S. and NATO. They are not mentioned at all in the report, not even once, despite the fact that in 2011, President Obama at the time said that it was those parties that took out Muammar Gaddafi and his what they called a regime. Remember this.
The United States and our friends and allies stopped Gaddafi's forces in their tracks. A coalition that included the United States, NATO, and Arab nations persevered through the summer to protect Libyan civilians. And meanwhile, the courageous Libyan people fought for their own future and broke the back of the regime.
Okay, So the U.S. and the West destabilized this region in 2011. But according to this report, they're not mentioned. So they've just been doing good deeds ever since. Is that what we're supposed to think?
Right. United States, NATO, and some other Arab countries that we strong-armed into supporting us in Libya.
Yes.
Was responsible, but no mention of them in this report.
No.
Okay.
According to the UN report, the U.S. and NATO, nowhere to be found. They're not even actors in this incidents. It's actually Europe that's supporting rebel forces doing bad things. Here is from the report. Based on the substantial evidence, put a pin in that substantial evidence part, and reports before it, the mission has grounds to believe that the European Union and its member states directly or indirectly provided monetary and technical support and equipment such as boats to the Libyan Coast Guard and the Directorate for Combating Illegal Migration that was used in the context of interception and detention of migrants. The European Union is supporting the rebels there. Oh, and Russia, of course, they take an opportunity to throw in Russia's Wagner group. They don't specifically say why or what they're doing, but here in this part about mercenaries, it mentions the Wagner group. I bolded it 8 times just so you can see. I'll read you just the first part. It says, again, put a pin in this evidence collected. It says evidence collected by the mission allowed it to make findings in relation to allegations of international law violations by the Wagner Group agents in southern Tripoli during the armed conflict in 2019 and 2020. The evidence demonstrated a heavier than initially calculated contamination of exploded Russian-made ordnance and commonly used Wagner landmines and other military explosive in manifestly civilian areas. Scroll down a little bit, one more sentence. The mission also confirmed the placement of military explosives in homes, inside sofas, and bathroom fixtures, for example, and other civilian areas, which led to death and injury of civilians. So, okay, so they said they have evidence of these explosives and mines being in, say, sofas or bathroom fixtures. Well, how do they know? What is that evidence? They tell us what their methodology is for this report. They just did interviews. I bolded the parts here that are important. It says, since its establishment, the mission has carried out more than 400 interviews, primarily with witnesses and victims, and collected more than 2,800 discrete items of information. A large portion of the items was in the form of reporting, meeting notes, and that kind of thing. So there weren't actually a lot of evidence collecting. It was mostly speaking to people. The last one here says the mission undertook 13 missions, which were conducted during the last mandate extended period, where they actually went to Tripoli and they went to Benghazi. So without too much, you know, actually on the ground reporting and mostly just speaking to these people, how do they know who made these bombs? How do they know who planted, like, do people who have been victims of bombs in their couches and bathroom fixtures generally know who made the bombs that were posted there? Or
it's probably the same group who investigated the pro-Ukrainian group. They just know.
They just know.
Yeah.
Right?
Therefore, no need to really investigate further.
Yeah.
We just know. We just have a feeling we know who it is.
Right. They're saying they didn't.
It's obvious.
It's obvious.
They're saying they didn't go to these crime scenes. They collected some artifacts, which we don't really get a sense of what they are, and they interviewed people. So how can they say for sure who did it? I'm just curious. I'm just curious because, you know, I'm remembering the report we did last year about the Uyghurs, where the United Nations didn't actually go there and see things. They presented us a whole report based on Google images. So forgive me for being a bit cautious about these United Nations reports. That's not to say Russia doesn't have an interest in Libya or may not be doing these things, but Russia absolutely does have an interest in all of Africa. But I'm asking a question, how do we know that? And I don't have answers from having read this report. Now, the report details all manner of human rights abuses, including torturing gay people, capture of journalists and lawyers, harming children, enslavement, arbitrary detention. We are not disputing that these things happen. What we are disputing is how did Libya come to this and who we think is responsible. Well, when Obama announced the death of Gaddafi, he said this.
Good afternoon, everybody. Today, the government of Libya announced the death of Muammar Gaddafi. This marks the end of a long and painful chapter for the people of Libya, who now have the opportunity to determine their own destiny in a new and democratic Libya. For four decades, the Gaddafi regime ruled the Libyan people with an iron fist. Basic human rights were denied, innocent civilians were detained, beaten and killed, and Libya's wealth was squandered. The enormous potential of the Libyan people was held back, and terror was used as a political weapon.
Okay. Libyan wealth was squandered away from people's prosperity, he says. Well, actually, it turns out Libyan wealth was squandered away from Western prosperity. That's why the Obama administration went after the Gaddafi administration. Here is some context from writer Stephen Gowans from his great book I recommend called Washington's Long War on Syria, saying after he seized power, Gaddafi arranged for Libya's oil wealth to be used to uplift Libyans, as the Arab Socialist Project enshrined in his constitution promised it would do. In 1963, Tripoli was a city of slums with many of its houses made from scrap and most without running water or electricity, according to a former State Department official. Gaddafi's Arab Socialist program enormously improved the lives of the settled coastal people. Under Gaddafi's government, they lived beyond the dreams of their fathers and grandfathers. Indeed, Arab nationalist Libya evinced a remarkable record of development in almost every aspect: education, healthcare, infrastructure, job creation, and usually with a commendable sense of social justice. So Obama giving us this sad story about how people had lived during the Gaddafi years was a lie, and he knew it. He had to have known it, or else he just didn't do his homework. Now, I want to prove to you that the West knew this and that the United Nations knew this. And I think, again, Stephen Gowans puts this together nicely. Again, I know this is a screenshot from a book. It's not a great screen, but I'm going to read it to you. And Clayton will lecture me about it later. It says, a year after Gaddafi was overthrown, the Wall Street Journal reported that private oil companies had been incensed at the pro-Libyan oil deals that the Gaddafi government was negotiating and had hoped for regime change in Libya would bring relief in some of the terms they had agreed to in partnership deals with Libyan oil company, the national oil company. For decades, many European companies had enjoyed deals that granted them half of the high-quality oil produced in Libyan fields, but Gaddafi renegotiated the company's share of oil from each field to as low as 12%. The Arab nationalist leader had also kept Libyan crown jewels off-limit to foreigners. The huge onshore oil fields that accounted for the bulk of Libya's oil production remained the preserve of the country's state companies. Western oil companies were also frustrated that Libya's state-owned oil companies stipulated that foreign companies had to hire Libyans for top jobs. As in November 2007, State Department cable complained that those who dominate Libya's political and economic leadership are pursuing increasingly nationalistic policies. It gets even worse here. They talk about how the labor laws were amended to Libyanize the economy, that is, give Libyans jobs. Oil firms pressed to hire Libyan managers, finance people, human resources. In fact, the New York Times subbed up the West's objection by saying Colonel Gaddafi proved to be a problematic partner for international oil companies, frequently raising fees and taxes and making other demands. Now, this last paragraph here points to the fact that the United Nations knew this. After Gaddafi was ousted, the United Nations lamented that Libya's development has been handicapped by its command economy and impeded by state investments, price controls, and subsidies. So here we have two different entities pretending that Libya was one thing before Gaddafi and another after, and both of them know that that's not true. That's the Obama administration saying that Libya was in the dumps and its people had no prosperity, not true. And the United Nations saying that Libya actually was prosperous during the Gaddafi years, and now acting like they didn't know, right? The United Nations knows that what the United States did kneecapped the Libyan economy. They knew it in 2011, but they're pretending they don't know it now. And so, you know, we can recall what Hillary Clinton said when she was asked about this, about, you know, Gaddafi, because she danced and did this little jingle about it.
So, I mean, that is the land of unconfirmed reports.
Yes, we came, we saw, he died.
Did it have anything to do with your visit?
No, I'm sure it did.
So funny, so funny.
So hilarious.
Killing dictators.
Regime, that, yeah, throwing over an entire government.
And also, it's like, it's all about oil, generally, because, like, there, Gaddafi was also introducing a called a gold dinar, and he was negotiating with Hussein in Iraq to trade oil in the gold dinar, and that was something that was highly, a lot of people wanted it in, like, African countries and stuff like that. It was a popular thing. And so it all revolves around oil. Anytime the U.S. is involved, if you look at oil and them trying to, like, either trade it in a different currency or something like that, it's just, it's insane how much pull that has on us.
Right. So but the United Nations knows that, too, that anytime a leader shows a penchant for Arab nationalism, you know, one of his heroes was Nasser from the leader of Egypt. who was one of, you know, one of the most modern day examples of Arab nationalism that wanted to keep prosperity and profits inside of Arab nations. And the United States just cannot abide that. So again, the United Nations knew that the US and NATO backed the Islamic extremists in Libya in order to destabilize that nation. They knew it in 2011. Why are they refusing to say it now? Well, because they gave themselves this cutoff date of 2016. Obama's gone, Trump's in, it's okay. We don't even have to look at it.
So the 5 years prior, when NATO literally overthrew a government and partnered with Al-Qaeda,
yes.
They partnered with Al-Qaeda, the very people that we were told, you know, attacked us on 9/11 and they're awful people. And yet we were literally funneling money and weapons to them. We team up like a Marvel team up. So we come together with Al-Qaeda to overthrow Gaddafi. That's what NATO and the United States did in Libya. And we just ignore that part of the story. That's what the United Nations does.
Yeah. So take this report with a grain of salt if you decide to read it. Go ahead, Philip.
It's like the UN pulled a George Lucas and started the story on episode 4.
Yes.
Like, and here we begin our story on episode 4.
Yeah. You know, like, which makes Darth Vader always the bad guy, right?
Right. And how do we know anything
There's
about
There's no context about
How does he
Muammar
become
Gaddafi?
Yes, that's a very apt anecdote. How does he become the bad guy? Oh, now how has Libya become the bad people? How has rape and destabilized country happen? Oh, cuz we ended up doing it. We did it to them.
Yeah.
That's just something.
But no, it's an opportunity to blame Russia and Europe.
Right.
Not the United States.
And UK. The UK is complicit in this as well.
Absolutely. You
know, UK yeah. intelligence services, US intelligence services. We've got more news to get to here on your Taco Tuesday. For that, though, we're going to move to Rumble. And I saw someone earlier asking about that crazy German doctor, Dr. Lauterbach. We're going to talk about him. And we're going to talk about crazy... he's basically the German Dr. Fauci. And wow, we've got some revealing information about COVID and what these doctors knew inside of Germany at the Ministry of Health and what they're now saying and the amount of adverse effects that we are now seeing in Germany and what this portends. It's an amazing about face from the German doctor. We will get to that in a moment, but we're going to have to do that on Rumble because there's some things we're going to talk about that we cannot talk about on YouTube, unfortunately, because they will block us. So come on over to Rumble where the water is warm. Our stream will continue unfettered. We just have to end the stream now on YouTube because of that. But again, Rumble is a censorship-free platform. And I was talking to my mother-in-law today, your mom.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, "How'd the show go last night?" And I said, "You know, went very well. We worked hard on it, and our audience on Rumble, we hit millions of viewers last night on Rumble. So to the millions of you who watched us last night on Rumble, thank you so much. That's very, very exciting. Our goal, of course, is to have Rumble take over for our platform of choice because they're censorship free." But right now we still have to use the big platform of YouTube to push us there. That's the goal. So, and we're thankful for YouTube for giving us this platform, but there are things that we also totally disagree with them on, and that's censorship. So anyway, come on over to Rumble right now. It's rumble.com/redacted is the URL. Come on over and subscribe over there and you can watch us there. Thank you, YouTube. We'll see you back here tomorrow. All right. We are on Rumble Live. And we should mention these are scary, crazy times right now, stressful times. And I was feeling really stressful today, actually, because look, we went to go see John Wick this weekend, and I love that movie. And I can leave that movie knowing that it's a movie, right?
Yeah.
Then I watched some horrible video, you know, out of Nashville today, and it's still shaking me to my core hours later. And it's stressful, right? And so how do you relax? Well, our friends over at CB Distillery have created something fantastic, which is actually helped me sleep tonight. And they have the best CBD products, including their top-rated Synergy Plus collection. No prescription needed. It's delivered to your door, and it is fantastic. It's their top-rated one, Synergy Plus collection. No prescription needed. It's delivered to your door. You don't need a prescription, but this delivers a sense of calmness and well-being that'll make you wonder how you manage life without it. So what could possibly be this effective by taking the edge off of life, delivering a level of chill you've never experienced? It's called Unwind Synergy plus THC and CBD. It's only available from cbdistillery.com. And you must be 21 or older to order. They support what we do here on Redacted, and we couldn't be more thankful for their support. They have, it's full spectrum, CBD plus hemp-derived Delta-9 THC. Bottom line, if you could use a little peace in your life, just try it. With over 2 million customers, cbdistillery.com is your source that you can trust. So visit cbdistillery.com, click on the Synergy Plus, and they're going to give you, and if you enter the code REDACTED at checkout, you'll get 20% off. If you need a little peace in your life, a little calm in your life, try it. That's cbdistillery.com, not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota. All right, let's talk about Germany's Dr. Fauci. Germany's Dr. Fauci just admitted some truth about the vaccines, and it's pretty darn stunning, actually. So Germany's Dr. Fauci isn't well known to most of us. Most of us probably haven't heard of Germany's Dr. Fauci. He does have his own name. If you live in Germany, you probably know this guy. He looks like a German villain from like Back to the Future or something like that. I don't know. Like you would fit
just
right
a
in.
Hint of Bill Nye. Just
yeah,
a hint of like Bill Nye.
German evil Bill Nye, the science guy. Anyway, this is Karl Lauterbach.
I'm going to guess that's a pandemic haircut because otherwise.
Oh, no. Wait till you see him in a new video. Like, you know, I'll show you the video in just a moment. But I think that's his kind of, that's the hair that he goes with.
He means to have that.
Pandemic or not. Lockdown or not.
That looks awful familiar.
Because he doesn't have to. Okay. It doesn't have to look like that, but all right, sure.
So that's Karl Lauterbach, Germany's Minister for Health. Just like America's Dr. Fauci, he was praised. He was held up as a hero in Germany. Like in the United States, remember all these people praising Dr. Fauci? They even made like little super action figures of Dr. Fauci. They were going to make a movie about Dr. Fauci. That's, you know, they were praising the guy. And even PBS was filming a two-year documentary of Dr. Fauci. So here he is. This is Dr. Lauterbach pushing everyone to get the vaccine, even to the point of forcing you to get a vaccine. We'll take away your rights as citizens unless you get vaccinated. I love that idea, he basically said. Here's how unheard.com sums him up. In his role as an advisor to Angela Merkel and prominent TV and Twitter commentator, and then as a country's health minister, Lauterbach adopted an aggressively pro-lockdown and pro-vaccination stance, claiming that his aim was to vaccinate every single German through the imposition of mandates, if necessary, in order to achieve so-called herd immunity. Like most countries, Germany didn't make vaccination legally mandatory for the general population, but rather made it de facto mandatory by making one's COVID status a precondition for leading anything resembling a normal life and making life impossible for the unvaccinated, including through targeted lockdowns. But it gets worse. There were some politicians in Germany that didn't actually agree with his forced mass mandate policy, vaccination policy, and he then took to Twitter to defend the vaccine, and he published his tweet, which has now become famous in Germany. This tweet that you're about to see is now famous in Germany, where he said there are no side effects and it'll save lives. Here's the tweet, first in German at the top and then translated by your friends over at Google. After that, it says, yes, it's correct. And it's also about why a minority of society does not want a vaccination without side effects, even though it's free and can save their lives and that of many others. That's why I'm pessimistic about voluntary sacrifices for climate protection.
Ooh, that's condescending.
Yeah. How so?
Oh, because he's saying people will not voluntarily make sacrifices for the climate because people are ultimately selfish.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So remember, he's the German Minister of Health, and what he was saying here was a total lie, total fabrication, because at the time, the German Ministry of Health knew that there were all kinds of health-related side effects, even in their own data, showed huge problems with the vaccines. Here's that report. Suspected cases of side effects or vaccination complications after vaccination. So this is from the German report. They knew this at the Ministry of Health. Germany's own numbers showed that there were serious adverse events occurred in 1 in 5,000 vaccinations in Germany. Then it increased to 2 out of every 1,000 people. That's what their data shows. Adverse events. So Germany knew that 2 out of every 1,000 people experienced a problem. Over the past 2 years, more than 300,000 cases of vaccine side effects have accumulated in Germany's own health ministry's database on his watch. This happened. And yet, he tweeted that there were no problems. He tweeted there are no problems, nothing to worry about. Well, now something amazing has happened on television. Germany's Dr. Fauci has done a complete 180 all of a sudden. In a new TV interview, a German TV station did an interview with Dr. Lauterbach, and before they went to that interview with him, which they had about a 5 or 7 minute interview, I watched the whole thing. You can watch it. You need to get it translated, though, if you'd like to see that. They did a whole section of their broadcast about adverse events and effects on the German population. And here's just an example. Here's a gymnast, a young girl. She's a gymnast. She was a star gymnast. Look at her. And she got the vaccine, and now look at her. Perfectly young, healthy girl, was a star gymnast, then got the vaccine, and now, you know, well, she can't walk, and she's now in a wheelchair. All kinds of breathing problems, everything else. See, perfectly healthy. Here I am, get my photo taken. It's vaccine time. And now I can't walk. And so my career is done in that. And there's a whole bunch of other people in this news report that they feature that had adverse events. A number of Germans who were perfectly healthy, like this young girl, then they got the vaccine. Now, you know, now they have all these problems, breathing problems, brain problems, you name it. So here's Lauterbach. Then he goes on TV. They did this report. Then they interviewed Lauterbach. And in this interview, he admitted that vaccine-induced injuries are a serious issue. Total 180. And he mentions in this interview that his ministry was planning to launch a program to investigate the negative consequences of COVID vaccinations and improve the care as soon as possible. He also now says that he hopes these drug makers will voluntarily help to compensate those who have been harmed by the vaccines.
Oh, there's that word again, voluntarily. He doesn't think we'll voluntarily do anything to save the planet, but he thinks drug makers will voluntarily give up profits. That's really sweet.
Do you think Pfizer and Moderna are going to put together some sort of a slush fund that's going to help people? Like, they're going to put together a whole bunch of money voluntarily to help people that have been adversely affected by their vaccines?
I do not think
that's why the 400 or 4,000% increase is to go to that. Like, they're going to increase the profits by that much just so that they have enough extra money to give to people.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead, Philip.
I was going to say, I'm pretty sure that, like, when it comes to, like, the big pharma, their second favorite thing on earth is just to give away money and ignore profits. Mm-hmm. That's kind of like
second favorite thing. Yeah.
I mean, it's right up there.
So 2 years ago, he said, and by the way, yeah, 2 years ago, he said that the drug makers would not get rich off. This is what he said this publicly. Don't worry about the drug makers. They're not going to get rich off these vaccines, and that everyone should just go out and get one. They're doing it for your good. They're not going to get rich off these, so you should just go get one. Now, in this interview, he literally says the drug makers have made insane profits and that they should pay back these families that have been hurt by them. Like, what was his, like, come to Jesus moment on this? Because the data in his own office had already been showing the problems. So what happened? Like, that's what I want to know. He had access to this data all along. Why now? Now that there are 300,000 people, adverse events, 300,000, that's the number in Germany. Now he's admitting it?
Amazingly absolving himself of any guilt in doing so. He's saying the drug makers, not the people that pushed it.
Yeah, we were. Yeah, he actively pushing everyone should go out there and get a vaccine right now.
Yeah.
And if you don't want to, we should actually have the government make you. He told we would literally take away your livelihood, your ability to travel, your conveniences, going to the store. Like, if you don't get a vaccine, he said, we should really make your life miserable, is basically were his words.
Right. I mean, to give him the extreme benefit of the doubt would be cognitive dissonance, that he just wanted so badly to get this vaccine out to end the pandemic that he was ignoring the facts that he had a bias against. That's the only sort of rational, although again, nefarious, because someone in that role has to be able to take a dispassionate look at the data and say, this seems a little too dangerous. Let's pump the brakes on it.
I mean, people said the same thing when they were presented with information about Auschwitz, right? And cognitive dissonance. I just don't want to look at this data. I just don't want to see what's actually happening when you've handed me this data about Auschwitz, right? Like, I just want to block that out of my brain. I don't know. Only he knows, right? But here he is, by the way. This is the same guy, and you'll love his haircut. This is the same guy that admitted they're using lockdowns as a trial run for climate lockdowns, and that's a good thing. Climate lockdowns are coming next, guys. And here he admits that this is a trial run. We should get used to it. Watch.
Bewältigung des Klimawandels seien Maßnahmen nötig, so und dann jetzt wörtlich, die analog zu den Einschränkungen der persönlichen Freiheit in der Pandemiebekämpfung sein. Wie haben Sie das denn gemeint?
Also ich kann ja jetzt beispielsweise weniger reisen, weil also die Reisebegrenzungen notwendig sind, damit wir nicht das Virus von einer Region, wo hohe Prävalenz ist, in eine andere Region übertragen. Ich muss auf viele Dinge verzichten, die ich gerne machen würde, weil es schädlich wäre für die öffentliche Gesundheit. Ich glaube, dass wir bestimmte Beschränkungen akzeptieren müssen, wollen wir den Klimawandel beherrschen. Dazu wird zum Beispiel gehören, dass wir nicht also so viel reisen, wie jeder reisen könnte. Ich würde es übrigens auch noch nicht mal für ausgeschlossen halten, dass wir in der Klimakrise in eine Situation kommen, wo wir das ein oder andere tatsächlich sogar verbieten müssen. Mhm.
Aber das ist doch genau das, was manche Kritiker jetzt befürchten, dass die Einschränkungen, die in der Corona-Pandemie benutzt werden als Blaupause für sowas, ich sage es in Anführungszeichen, wie eine Klimadiktatur.
Ja, aber das sind doch Verschwörungstheorien.
Wieso? Sie haben doch gerade erzählt, dass die Corona-Maßnahmen Vorbild sein sollen und müssen für die noch viel größere Klimakatastrophe.
Yeah. Oh, that's just a conspiracy theory, he said.
Well, the guy did a good job of pushing back.
No, he was a good interview.
Yeah.
He's like, well, wait a second. You said this, so I'm using your own words back at you. You said this.
It's funny the world we live on. Whenever a journalist asks a relevant follow-up, I'm like, oh, that was good. You're paying attention.
Yeah, you asked a tough question.
Yeah.
Put them on the spot. These are your words.
Didn't expect that.
People would say that this is a dictatorship, what you're calling for.
Right.
That's just conspiracy theories. So there's your guy, Lauterbach.
Can I back up?
Done a 180-degree turnaround. Go ahead, Phil.
Can I back up and ask a question on something that he said earlier that you brought up in one of the images, where like he was talking about like taking people's citizenship if they didn't get vaccinated? Like, what are the logistics in that? What do they do? Like then deport them into international waters? What the hell do you do with somebody that's a citizen of no country? You can't send them anywhere.
Right, but they just, can't go anywhere either, because you could revoke a passport.
Yeah, you could literally put them in...
Make somebody stateless.
I mean, Germany knows something or a thing or two about putting people in certain kind of camps.
Yeah, I was going to say, like...
You know, they're very good at that.
It'd be more humane to just shoot them. Because like what is somebody gonna do that's like living like in a society that they're not part of? They can't leave, they can't go anywhere, they don't have any agency to travel to do anything, they can't vote, they can't get any like public services. Like, how do you take away somebody's citizenship as a punishment? Like that's just absolute
insanity. Can't get a job because you can't pay taxes on a social security number you don't have. Unless you are doing that stateless. I don't know exactly how that would work.
I mean, these people literally have, short-term memory. I mean, think about what Germany did to people. I mean, like it was systemic, actual, I mean, we don't need to retread it, but it was a machine of putting people in camps. It was an absolute machine of mass rounding up and deportation and moving people by the hundreds of thousands, millions into these camps. And this is basically what he's saying. Hey, we can't do that. We're going to just round people up. We're going to take away your rights. And now we want it for climate, by the way. I don't know. I really would love to know why he suddenly had this about face on this and admitted on television that, it's bad. What these vaccines are doing to people is bad news, is what he's telling people. And the vaccine manufacturers should pay for it. Let us know what you think about it in the chat below. We do have a daily newsletter. We'd love for you to subscribe to it. It's totally free. It's a way to kick off your morning if you want to wake up with a 5-minute, 10-minute read over your cup of coffee that won't cost you anything and is written by Natalie and myself. And we kind of cover about 5 or 6 big stories of the day and kind of get you caught up on what's happening. We write it early in the morning, so when you wake up around 6:30, 7 a.m. Eastern time, you should receive it in your inbox. All you need to do is go to redacted.inc is how you sign up. Not .com, it's redacted.inc. And then just put in your email address. You'll receive a welcome email. You have to verify it so you know it's not spam. And then tomorrow morning, you'll get the first newsletter on a Wednesday. That'll be your first one. And again, cover the markets, some of the things you missed. Try to make you laugh a little bit. We also try to cover stories the news and the mainstream media totally ignores. And we cut through the propaganda. Redacted.inc is how you can subscribe. So thank you, guys. We really appreciate you joining us here on the show tonight. We will be back at 4 p.m. Eastern time tomorrow. Thank you, everyone, for watching us. Have a great night.